okay. We have no money and no inventory. There's still something we can do. That's still a business somehow.
How does D&B's do it? I think I got a complicated system worked out, and I cannot begin to understand it.
How does a self-sustaining economy work?
I don't understand how the U.S. economy works, much less some sort of self-sustaining one. I don't understand how finances work.
Shots for everybody!
I'm Vincent McCarty, and this is an introduction to Series 2 of the ESG Factor podcast. Now, fans of Always Sunny in Philadelphia will recognize that first clip. That's Mac and Dennis figuring out that they know very little about economics, never mind some form of self-sustaining economy. But the reason I include it is not just because I'm a huge fan of the show, but when most people think about a sustainable economy or a sustainable business, their starting point is a very basic understanding of economics and finance in general. The subject of finance, economics, investments, for most people is shrouded in mystery to begin with. So when we start to talk about a sustainable economy, we have to recognize that a lot of people don't understand the basics of economics and finance to begin with. There's a complexity within the way the subject is conveyed that makes it very difficult for people to get to grips with an extra layer. And what I mean by an extra layer is how we incorporate sustainability into the likes of economic policy, investment policy. How do we think about sustainability in terms of developing a business model? So when we approach this subject, we have to remember that if we're going to make the subject much more accessible to a broader population, because ultimately our success in terms of achieving this holy grail of sustainable economic development will depend hugely on a greater percentage of the population being aware of the impact of their decisions as consumers and investors. You know, I think it's important to remember that at a basic level, the push for sustainability is really a push for greater balance. At its most basic level, it has to be something that's in equilibrium, in balance with our planet. And at the moment, we're using up our planet at a much faster rate than it can sustain. So at the moment, we have a global economy that just is not in equilibrium with our planet. If you think about a sustainable company, then a sustainable company has to be in balance with the various stakeholders. That includes the environment, that includes the community, the people working in these companies. And a big part of it does come back to individuals, because as individuals, we have to live more in balance with our natural environment. But we also have to recognize when we're talking about an economy, our individual decisions are reflected in the output of an economy. So if we want a sustainable economy, we have the power to create it in terms of the decisions we make as consumers and investors, but more importantly, who we elect. I think the quote was from Abraham Lincoln, but if I'm wrong, you can correct me. He said something along the lines of, "The government that you elect is the government that you deserve." And I think that's important, because if we're going to have a sustainable economy and a sustainable future, then we obviously need to elect governments that are going to be able to, I suppose, have the vision and the conviction needed to follow through on their policies. And a big part of our problems and the challenges that we face is the fact that politics has failed to deliver on the promises of the past. So you only have to look at the policies around sustainable economic development historically, if you go back to Japan in 1990 with the Kyoto Protocol, or the Paris Accord in 2015, the Sustainable Development Goals. We're still, with Kyoto, we missed it dramatically, but we're still way behind in terms of the Sustainable Economic Development Goals. You know, the first two goals that they have are zero hunger and zero poverty. I mean, we're miles and miles away from achieving those goals. So obviously something has to change at a political level to elect people that can actually follow through in terms of the promises that are being made on what a sustainable economy looks like. And that's why I suppose it keeps coming back to having a more informed population. And I think that's ultimately the objective of this podcast series is to make the subject of sustainability more accessible to people in how it relates to those big decisions around consumption, business, investments, economic development, and the governments that we elect. And that's the challenge for this podcast, is to make the subject much more interesting and engaging for people, because we need to connect the dots between all of those various elements if we're actually going to move forward with real change in terms of sustainability being incorporated and being applied in a meaningful way. Because otherwise, we're just going to continue with the status quo and there'll be changes around the fringes. But the change that we actually need to put the planet, I suppose, on a trajectory that will sustain future generations and at the same time create a society at a planetary level where everybody has a life worth living, we need meaningful change. And that's why in this series I'm talking to people in various countries. One of the individuals I'm talking to is in Brazil, and we're going to hear about the dark side of mining, the impact of company behavior where sustainability isn't taken seriously. Staying in Latin America, I'll also be talking to my friends in Guatemala to give listeners a sense of what it's like there, the challenges that are faced in developing countries, and we'll also be talking about impact investing. From an investment perspective, sustainability is sometimes looked on as a constraint rather than as an opportunity. So one of the things that is interesting is that through the transition that will be happening over the coming decades, there will also be investment opportunities. That's why I have a dedicated episode on the future of transport and the changes that we're likely to see over the coming decade. We'll look at the road to net zero. Obviously, companies and governments are making big promises in terms of net zero emissions. So I'll be talking to somebody who's an expert in this area to understand what it actually means and maybe some of the ways that we can optimize that journey to net zero. I'll also be chatting to somebody that works in real estate and private assets, because one of the things that when we talk about sustainability, we tend to talk about executives and companies, but the built environment that we have created in terms of our cities, our houses, our offices, etc., that's something that produces carbon emissions on a grand scale. So it's important that the buildings that we construct and the cities that we create are developed in a much more sustainable way. So we'll be discussing what it means to, I suppose, naturalize our built environment. And then finally, I'll be talking to a sustainability startup in Dublin. We're getting a sense of the driving motivations behind setting up a company that is targeting a sustainability challenge. And I think that's what we're going to see more of in the future. Startups being set up explicitly to target the wide range of sustainability challenges that we face. So that's the outline for series 2 of the ESG Factor podcast. 6 episodes, 6 thought-provoking discussions. There's a wide range of topics covered and a wide range of perspectives, but the one common feature is that all of the guests share a passion and enthusiasm for what they do. And I think you'll agree that if we are to achieve the holy grail of sustainable economic development, we'll need a lot more people that are passionate and enthusiastic about achieving it and making it a reality. If you're interested in learning more about the ESG Factor, you can check out theesgfactor.com, or you can find the podcast on all of the major podcast platforms.